You're listening to Rambling Business, the only multimedia podcast with Rick and Brandon,
where we get into your business no matter where it is.
And today we'll be talking about the Wairika Franco-American Hotel, Ghosts, Girls, and Gamblers. We finish our series on Wairika today, the small gold town in Northern California, by telling you about the city's biggest historical landmark, the Franco-American Hotel. Stick around for the amazing history that Rick learned from Gary Nelson and why you should make one of your stops on that way up Highway A5 towards Oregon if you're heading up there to the trees.
Yes.
And the...
Yes, you're like in the middle of nowhere and you pass that Mount Shasta.
Yep.
This is a great place to go to.
Of course, coming up soon are our tax tales and our vacation tips, so stay listening.
In 1851, Abraham Thompson camped in Northern California one night on his way to Oregon. You know, he had about half a dozen guys with him.
Yeah.
And the area is kind of soggy and flat. And so the next morning he got up to tend his mules, and he noticed the grass hanging out of the mule's mouth, and the dirt on the bottom of the grass had gold flakes on it.
Well, that's a good find.
Yeah, I know. Now, can you imagine? He wakes up in the morning, and these guys probably have a flask, right? Mm-hmm. So, just something to take the edge off in the morning.
A little nip.
He walks over. You know, he walks over. He looks at his mule, and there's gold in its mouth. I get to see this mule, smiling at him like he just had a root canal with caps on it. You know,
yeah.
And this guy's looking at his flask, thinking that his wife told me he should stop drinking. This mule's got gold teeth.
That's some expensive grass.
Yes, that's right. So it's he realized, of course, probably after pouring out the flask.
This hopefully was real. Not just looking through the mule's dung.
I didn't even thought about that. Yeah. So anyway, his party decided not to leave. They decided they were going to sit there and start looking for this gold that was there. This was very unusual. And this actually was in the north at the place now called Wairika, or right next to it. So it was dubbed the richest square mile on earth because gold did not have to be mined. It actually was only a few feet below the surface.
Oh, man.
And the reason why is because on the west side there were some hills, and the gold would wash down off the hills on its way down to the Shasta River, and it would just leave sediments, almost like an automatic gold panning.
You know?
Now remember, this is only a couple years after the gold was discovered at Sutter's Mill down south.
Yeah.
So we're not too far away from that. So people started making their way up north. The place was called Thompson's Dry Diggings, and it birthed the city of Wairika. And the Franco-American Hotel was built by Leon Martinez in 1875. Now, this was the largest hotel between San Francisco and Portland, housing 78 guests in 63 rooms. And he named it the Franco-American because it had a French design, but it was used for American type of activities.
Gold digging.
And dancing girls and gambling and everything mm-hmm. else that goes along with that.
Because they definitely didn't have any of those in France.
Like the Moulin Rouge.
That invented the can-can.
Oh.
Oh, and what's that French? Baccarat?
Baccarat?
Yeah. Is that French?
I don't know. I used to play that in Vegas a long time ago.
Ugh.
I used to win on that, actually. I think I won like $5. But he'll pay for your college.
But help pay for the buffet, you mean.
Okay. Anyway, a lot of people stayed there. President Garfield and Hayes. And then General Sherman, which people in Atlanta do not even like that name. He stayed there when he was fighting the American-Indian Wars.
Mm-hmm.
And his wife would actually stay there while he went out and fought in the whole West type, the West area.
Well, he made
area.
Sorties out from there.
That's right. There were no fired bricks. You know how you have kilns, things like that, are firing these
bricks.
Because
it was such a small town?
Right. It was only done in like San Francisco, places
big
like
cities.
That. Right. So they had to build it with unfired clay bricks. And there was a big fire in 1871. And almost all the buildings burned down, except for this one, because it had these bricks.
Mm-hmm.
And so, oh, by the way, it started from firecrackers on the 4th of July. I mean, you could just see that.
You thought that that was a modern thing? No.
I mean, and you think I'm crazy when I was talking about, Thompson and his flask. Here we got 4th of July firecrackers burning down an entire city.
Well, back then, I mean, there were firefighters, but no water pressure.
They were volunteers, too.
Yeah, they were using buckets. Of course stuff burnt down.
So the city then required that if you're going to rebuild, you have to build in brick. And that still stands today. If you drive down the street, you still see some of those buildings that were built at this time in 1871 were
bricks.
They're still there, bricks. Yeah. Now, the hotel was a very interesting location because it was actually a stop for the stagecoach. But what Gary was telling me, he said, this is not the kind of stagecoach you see on Bonanza where, you know, you open up the door and you see this woman getting out with a long dress mm-hmm. and anything like that.
Glass windows.
That's right. He said, this was just for currency. This was a separate route, and they would cover.
Oh, this is the Wells Fargo route.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is. Yeah. Wells Fargo was in that building.
With Black Bart.
Who's Black Bart?
He was a stagecoach robber.
Oh.
Not the pirate.
Oh, okay.
But they named
his ship was a little.
His name was Bart, and they called him after the pirate. He was a guy who robbed Wells Fargo.
Really?
Just Wells Fargo. And no one really knows why, except they found a letter to his wife after uh-huh. he like abandoned her on the East Coast. Uh-huh. He wrote her many years later and uh-huh. said, it was like the last letter, and he said, Wells Fargo has like screwed me over for the last time, and then he went off the map and just started robbing Wells Fargo.
Wow. You know, I have to bring this up to some of our bankers that work on our clients from Wells Fargo. Mm-hmm. See if they know anything about this.
They probably know nothing about it.
So they would not even really stop at this on a stagecoach run. They would cover it in like 72 hours or something, and it would only change just to change the horses. And so there was no passengers. It was just getting the money back, moving around among these cities, you know. Mm-hmm. So it was very interesting because you never see that on TV and like that. So
I've never really seen a like armored car at a gas station, so I guess makes sense.
Well, here's the thing is that they would have four armed guards in addition to the two guys that are on there.
Oh, inside the actual coach.
I don't know. I imagine it would be inside. I don't know how it was set up, but they had four armed guards. And when you look at the Wells Fargo picture, mm-hmm. they don't have four armed guards
just
on that thing.
Just
two guys, yeah.
Unless they're all in the back.
You never know. This is why I'm not robbing stagecoaches, because I may not know that.
Yeah.
Right?
You never know when there might be four guys, one hanging to the axles.
Right, underneath.
One
right.
flying above it.
Right.
With some wings on. Who knows?
So it was a very interesting hotel. But also what Gary's talking about is he said, you know, there were different types of wisdom. There were women. There was like a caste system of women.
Interesting.
You had dancers and prostitutes.
That's okay. The lowest
different,
caste.
Different people, you know. And then you had other women that were church-going women, and they were called doves. And the ones who were prostitutes were called soiled doves.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me that in walking down Wairika, if you had a woman who was a prostitute, or as they would be called, a soiled dove, and she'd be walking in down the street, and then a woman from the other side, a church woman, would be walking that way, she would have to cross the street.
Oh, okay.
She would
to stay out of the way of the church woman.
That's right.
Because of the case system. Yeah.
However, as fate has it,
mm-hmm.
the people who were making lots of money were the dancers
yeah.
and probably the prostitutes and not the church women.
mm-hmm. Well, yeah, it makes sense. I mean, if you look at all the old West towns, the prostitutes made so much money that they also supported schools.
Oh, really?
And all sorts of stuff and started industries up there because they were the people who were getting most of the proceeds, them and bartenders.
Well, one such person, not a prostitute, but a dancer, was Loretta Crabtree. Now, she is famous in San Francisco.
For inventing the Crabtree. The tree that grows crabs? or what? Crab apples?
Oh, I don't know. I was going to say, tree that grows crabs. Is this how they get, like, crabs in the Midwest? You have to go to the ocean? Oh, okay. That's pretty good. Maybe. We'll have to look that up. But anyway, she was there for 2 years. She made a fortune because what happens when she danced, these guys were so starving for female attention, they would throw her gold nuggets. Can you imagine?
Oh, yeah.
Today.
That would hurt. Those things are heavy. When I was on an improv team in college, a little before me, they used to collect donations, and people would just throw change on the stage at the people. And they eventually had to stop it because people start getting hurt. Same deal.
So, you know, you think about $1,000 an ounce in today's thing, you know. So they're throwing these gold nuggets, and she had another business manager, another woman, and ended up buying property all over the place. And there, I think there is a monument of some sort to her in San Francisco, because she helped create a lot of things, and probably did some of the things that you said did. But you know, things end. Not everything
all
goes
good
forever.
Things come to the end.
Yeah, that's right, including gold rushes. So it died down, and then also they brought in the trains, but that wasn't a train stop. So
oh, really?
Yeah, it wasn't. And so what happens is,
was that before or after the gold dried up?
After.
Okay.
I think it was after, yeah.
No wonder they didn't stop over.
Yeah, right. So it closed in 1915, but then it reopened again during the Depression. It closed during the Depression, and then it reopened again as a boarding house, and then it was closed in 1960 because it still had the original building stuff in the 1800s, and it wasn't even close to being...
And it wasn't even fired bricks.
That's right.
Well, I guess it was because it survived that fire.
That's right. Well, bricks don't burn, I guess, unless you have a very high heat. But Gary had said that that the structure of it today, if you were to open up as a hotel, you would have to do so much work on that thing, because even the footings are just like 4 feet deep. They're not really big footings, and they're very small, you know, like a couple feet wide or something. And it's not even a good foundation. And what a geologist told him is that if you were to buy the entire town of Old Yreka and you were to level all the buildings and take up all the gold that was under those buildings that nobody else got.
Oh.
It said you could actually rebuild the town and be a millionaire after that. That's how much gold there's still there under those buildings.
So what you're saying is you should get a job trying to fix foundations in Yreka?
That's exactly what I'm saying. That's the business tip for today. So Gary and his wife, Rosalie, bought the hotel out of foreclosure in 2012 with the dream of preserving history. He initially learned about it because he used to come there as a gunfighter actor. Yeah, the gunfighter. Yeah, he came looking for accountants.
Yeah.
No, he came there as, you know, reenacting historical cowboy shows and things like that. And he came as a gunfighter. And so they used to go upstairs and change. And so he learned about that thing. But they bought this thing. But the building can't be reopened as a hotel, because I told you. Mm-hmm. But his wife and him lived there with several resident ghosts.
Okay.
And they were actually on the...
How much do they pay in rent?
Gosh, that's a good question.
Ghosts are not quiet tenants.
Yeah.
But the heating and cooling is... The cooling bill's way low.
There was one time at 3 a.m., he said, where they were sleeping in bed, and all of a sudden they heard something that sounded like a shotgun blast in the next room. Mm-hmm. And he jumped out of bed, and he ran in there, and there was a door that was open before that they never really could close, because, you know, when you repaint the door jamb over and over, you can't close it, you know, because it's too much. It had slammed shut, all right, this door, all right? And he said, well, you know, maybe a ghost closed it or something, you know. They tried to get it open. They couldn't get it open. They actually had to take it off the hinges and bust it open with a crowbar. They could not get the door to open again.
Wow.
So, you know, they've had lots of mediums come in and different things like that. So, and they have tours that go on like that. So volunteers actually conduct these tours Friday through Sundays in the summers. And it's a museum, and it's helping to preserve history. And that's their passion that they have. And the town really benefits from that a lot.
If you want to find out more about the Franco-American Hotel, just go to francoamericanhotel.com or visit them on Facebook. You're listening to Rambling Business. We'd like to thank our sponsor, Rick E. Norris and Accountancy Corporation. If you'd like to get the full experience, check out our website for videos, music, pictures, takeaways, and travel tips. www.ramblingbusiness.com. Now it's time for our tax tales, where we tell you about strange and unusual taxes from the past and the present.
Tax tales.
And since we've been talking about gambling in the Old West, the iconic thing that people did back then for fun was play poker.
Right.
Right? Alabama, in modern times, is the only state that will tax you for buying a deck of cards still.
This is a gamble.
Yeah. For each deck you purchase, you pay 10 cents extra, which isn't going to break the bank, but I guess if you're going to penny ante stakes, then yeah, it really does.
Yeah, that's right. That's 10 of them. You're right.
10 whole antes. Now it's time for our travel tip, where we tell you what fun things you can do around the Wairika area.
Up the road from Wairika, on I-5, about 45 minutes or so, is the town of Ashland, Oregon. Now, it's not on I-5. You kind of got to turn off and go a little east, but that's how you get there. It's a very interesting town to visit when you're visiting Wairika, because it is a place where it is well known for Shakespearean plays.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a cute little town. They have like a river, runs through a park and different things where you can actually eat in next to this little river. And you can take long strolls, and if you want to learn more about Shakespeare, that's the place to go.
There's like 8 or 10 shows going on at a time.
Yes.
There.
It was really cool.
Now it's time for our takeaways, where we tell you what steps you can take to implement what we've been talking about on the podcast. The first thing to think about is, if you plan to preserve an institution, the motivation has to be personal, from your heart, because in most cases, doing historical society stuff or preserving history is not a huge money-making proposition.
Mm-hmm.
It's something you got to do to love.
Your money would be history.
Yeah. Well, it depends on if you go down there and dig up the foundations, I guess, in Wairika. Gary, for example, is an Old West history buff who likes participating in mock gun battles, so having a place to do it is his bread and butter.
Number two is, before buying, do not short yourself on the research. Research every aspect of the proposition. Gary and Rose Lee knew about this building and looked into it far before buying it. You know, he was there a lot, and they probably talked about this in the car, driving back and forth. What should we do? What should we not do? Well, let's look this up. Let's look that up and figure it out.
The third thing to think about is, focus on reviving history, not rewriting it.
Yeah.
Stories are lost through generations and can only be preserved by those who are willing to preserve them. And, you know, it really shows when you have the sort of place that used to be historical and now it's like a terrible pirate show or whatever. You know, I've been to it. You know, real history has a feeling that people, they can see through the BS. Basically.
Yeah, right. Yeah, come to Hollywood.
Yeah.
Number four and last, find those who share the same passion as you do and ask them to volunteer, like Gary did with these tours. He can't do everything himself.
Yeah.
Right?
Sometimes he's got to be out gunfighting. So he can't do every tour.
Or finding a mule and see what they're chewing on.
Now it's time to answer a question from one of our listeners. This one is an email that comes from Julie. She says, I'm late filing my taxes, not just for 1 year, for a couple years.
Uh-oh.
What should I do?
File them, Julie.
as soon as possible.
File them, Julie. File your taxes. File them. That's one of the ghosts talking from the hotel.
That's the ghost. The ghost accountant.
That's right. File them, and, you know, if you owe taxes, first of all, you might have a refund. That's possible.
Sometimes people are so afraid to file taxes, find out the government owes them money.
But there is a statute of limitation on your refunds, a few years, so you got to get them filed. But if you do owe taxes, file them. You'll get a notice from the IRS. You could go online, call them up, get a payment plan, get them paid off. Stay caught up with your taxes. Because when you don't,
penalties,
and they start filing liens, it could hit you in things that you wouldn't believe, such as, like you and I would do the background checks for tenants, pops up on there.
Yep.
Because there's it affects their credit.
Any sort of owed money, basically.
Yeah. So there's certain things like that that people don't realize that comes back to bite them later on.
And now most jobs do credit checks on you.
Oh, wow.
When you apply for jobs, that's the thing that happens.
Whoa.
That's all we have for this week. Tune in next week when we shoot down south to the Sonoma coast, just north of San Francisco. Good wine country. But till then, I'm Brandon.
And this is Rick, and thank you for letting us get into your business, no matter where it is. Our music and podcast was produced by my son, Devin S. Norris. For all your music, composition, and podcast needs, check out devinsnorris.com.